We're checking in on connectivity and the work of building out broadband in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. President Biden, as you know, signed the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill last year with roughly $65 billion dedicated to improving broadband across America. Here's Biden Friday at the House Democratic retreat, courtesy of PBS NewsHour.
We can't be the country where for a mom to get her kid on the internet to be able to do their homework has to pull in the McDonald's parking lot. I mean, for real. That's what's happening.
Are you that parent who has had to drive to a parking lot to get a signal? How much do you budget for having high-speed internet? What projects do you want the federal funds to prioritize for broadband? 800-642-1234. Bill Esbeck is executive director for the Wisconsin State Telecommunications Association, a group representing the interests of dozens of telephone companies, internet service providers, and wireless carriers. Bill, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate being here this morning.
Well, in these times, we've realized that affordable and reliable high-speed internet is more than just a nice thing to have. It's become a necessity for communities, for families. Let's hear your take on the situation in Wisconsin. From a telecom perspective, what should we know from your vantage point?
Well, as you mentioned, internet has become an absolute necessity over the last couple of years. That has really been highlighted through the pandemic with the priority on distance learning and telecommuting and telehealth. The availability of internet has really allowed many folks in Wisconsin to get through the pandemic. And, you know, we are focused on continuing to reach those that do not yet have robust broadband service. But I think it's important to put a context on the work that's been done in recent years. And when we look at FCC data from 2016, that data tells us that 85% of all Wisconsin homes had access to a 25/3 broadband service from DSL, cable, fiber, and fixed wireless. And 25 megabits per second down, 3 megabits per second up is what the FCC defines as broadband currently.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2016, we had 85% of the state covered. In December of 2020, and that's the most recently available data set, the FCC data tells us that 97% of Wisconsin is now covered by that 25/3 service using those same four technologies of DSL, cable, fiber, and fixed wireless. So on a statewide basis, we're doing very well. The rural data tells us that we've got room for improvement in rural areas. In 2016, we had about 54% coverage in rural areas from those same four technologies I mentioned at that 25/3 service.
Mm-hmm.
In December of 2020, that was all the way up to over 90% in rural areas. That represents a 36% increase. Now,
I just want to pause there because, you know, that is dramatic. What are can you point to that has caused you to see connectivity advance more quickly than in the past?
Yeah, I think we've seen the confluence of federal and state programs that have really targeted unserved areas. We've had a combination of programs from the FCC, over the last couple of years, ACAM 2, which ACAM is the Alternative Connect America model. And then they had a phase two of that program that is really designed to expand broadband access above, you know, meeting and exceeding that 25/3 service. We've also seen an incredible investment from the state of Wisconsin through the state program known as the Broadband Expansion Grant Program. And that's been in place since fiscal year 2014. We've seen 11 cycles of grants awarded from the Public Service Commission, which administers that program. And the Public Service Commission has awarded more than $178 million in grants over that time period. And that does not include the matching funds that the private sector providers bring to the table.
Well, another round of those PSC grant applications due tomorrow, I would like to add. But I'm going to reintroduce you here. Bill Esbeck, Executive Director for the Wisconsin State Telecommunications Association, as we get up to date on broadband connectivity in Wisconsin, where it's at. You can join in. What is internet access like in your part of the state? Is it reliable? How much do you have to spend to stay connected online? Can you afford it? Do you have issues with throttling? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bill, you bring up these public-private partnerships, and I think which is really interesting to look at, and I want to spend some time on this because, you know, they say that these P3s, as they say, and I'm wondering, who is the lead partner here? Is it the public partner or the private government partner that is best able to design and build an effective high-speed internet network for a community? Who takes the lead?
Yeah, in most cases, it is the private sector company that is taking the lead and actually making the grant application. We do have a couple examples in recent cycles where the public entity, the local government, has been the lead, but the planning, the engineering, the ownership, the operation, that should be left to the private sector provider. These are companies that have, in many cases, been providing telecommunications service for more than 100 years. They are the subject matter experts in designing the networks, running the network successfully, taking care with the customer service. They are the entity in the partnership that should be entrusted with the ownership and operation of the network.
But with all of these federal grant dollars flowing in, hundreds of millions of dollars, if you look at in recent years, it does make me wonder who should own the completed internet network for a community, because there is immense federal subsidy and buy-in.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a goal. Expanding internet access is a goal that everyone supports at every level of government. And what we have seen is the successful expansion of broadband internet in Wisconsin is owned and operated by the private sector providers. We've actually seen a handful of companies in recent years, a handful of communities in recent years make efforts to build their own broadband and internet facilities mm-hmm. in their communities, and they have not been successful. They don't have the subject matter expertise, and in multiple cases, they've been forced to sell their infrastructure to private sector providers because they have not been able to make the business work, and they've been losing a significant amount of money.
I'm thinking Reedsburg comes to mind as one example. How would you rate that community?
Reedsburg is unique in the time period that they entered the marketplace, and they entered the telecommunications and internet marketplace well before internet really took hold in Wisconsin. And they are the exception to the rule. If you look at the village of Jackson, if you look at Shawano and Antigo, recently Sun Prairie, those are all communities who tried to own and operate their own internet businesses to provide broadband access for their residents, and they failed. They had to go to the Public Service Commission and request from the Public Service Commission the the sale of those properties. And they laid it out in black and white, you know, how much money they were losing, what they were projected to lose in coming years. It was not a pretty picture that they painted. And they had, you know, they had to be very forthright with the Public Service Commission in those documents. But those communities have tried and failed much more recently than the Reedsburg start date that you point out.
Let's pause right here with Bill Esbeck, who leads the Wisconsin State Telecom Association, representing the interests of telecom providers, as we discuss the rollout of broadband in our state and the status of it. What challenges do you have with the internet where you live? What would help? Whose job is it to solve and pay for the last mile problem, getting rural customers connected? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Bill Esbeck here on the Ideas Network. We're checking in on broadband in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Governor's Task Force on Broadband Access, they met again a week ago to work on connectivity. Meanwhile, the PSC, the Public Service Commission, is making available $100 million for the next round of state broadband expansion grants we've been talking about. Eligible applicants would be cities, villages, towns, telecoms. Application deadline tomorrow for that round of grants. How would broadband be deployed more efficiently to underserved regions of our state? 800-642-1234. Bill Esbeck leads the Wisconsin State Telecom Association with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Mickey now in Ellison Bay. Hi, Mickey. Go ahead. What's your question?
Hi. First off, I appreciate the grant and the information that your guest is sharing. However, having worked with the Economic Development Committee in the town of Liberty Grove for 5 years now, it just seems like this is just a really slogging, long process. In your question about who will ultimately own the infrastructure that hopefully will be invested in by a public-private partnership with the town of Liberty Grove and Insight, who is one of the few companies who have demonstrated, finally have demonstrated some interest in helping us up here. If they're acquired or things change hands, as we see all the time, our taxpayer money, as you pointed out, is being put into developing this infrastructure, and our town will be borrowing money to put that investment in. And I still may not see any results from that because I won't be the first one who gets connected. What kind of safeguards in these public-private partnerships are we going to have that we are not then at the mercy of the providers who already currently do not make any effort to help us at all?
Mickey, thank you. Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, Nikki, thank you so much for that question. I can tell you that you've got more than a 100-year guarantee that Insight is not going anywhere. Insight was founded the same year that that WSTA was founded in 1910. They began as the Pulaski Telephone Company. They're still a family-owned operation. And they've been an incredible example of a company that has evolved over the years. They have their local landline fiber broadband operations, and they have Cellcom, which is one of the largest regional, still family-owned cellular providers in the nation. But I know Insight has been doing incredible work in Door County. They've also got partnerships with communities like Bailey's Harbor. I've spoken with some of the individuals that are involved in the Bailey's Harbor project, and they've got other things in the works in Door County and that area of the state. They are going to be bringing their private sector capital to the table. And I want to make sure that this is clear. When we're talking about grants that are supported by either state dollars or federal dollars, the private sector providers still bring a significant amount of funding to the table. In many cases, it's more than half the value of the project in terms of the investment, but you cannot discount the subject matter expertise that they bring to the table to run the network and run the business effectively and efficiently. You cannot buy that off the shelf. You have to have people who are capable of, you know, of running the business and making sure that it is successful for the long term.
And I hear that because, you know, once you put in that infrastructure, once you lay all that cable all over the state, there is the maintenance of all that new infrastructure. There's security, how to build out the security and the maintenance of that. And, you know, Mickey is getting at this here. There's a lot of risk involved. There's risk for communities. And what if that provider changes hands, even though it has been around for 100 years? As all this infrastructure comes in, you know, that is also a concern on the minds of communities. How do you maintain this? And who is going to maintain it?
Yeah, and if there is a transition with a company, it is in the best interest of everyone involved in that transaction, including the acquiring company, to maintain that service. You know, that is the revenue stream that that the acquiring company is purchasing. They are going to want to continue providing that service, continue the relationship with those customers, so that the business can continue effectively.
And speaking of that revenue stream, and I'm just going to reintroduce you here as we talk to Bill Esbeck, Executive Director for the Wisconsin State Telecommunications Association, looking at broadband, 800-642-1234. The revenue streams for these companies, I mean, once the broadband is accessible, there is cost. There is the cost that, you know, is completely out of reach for some households. What is your association's position on net neutrality, on the concept of an open, equal internet for everyone?
So I think net neutrality and affordable internet may be conflated in a way that isn't helpful for this conversation. But what I will say is that in the infrastructure package that was signed into law by President Biden in November, there's a $14 billion affordable connectivity program that I'm confident WSTA members are going to participate in. And what that will do is provide a $30 subsidy from the federal government on a monthly basis to help buy down the cost of internet service for individuals that qualify. So that'll be $30 per month for most households in a situation where the internet service is being provided on tribal lands. That's a $75 support mechanism per month. So the you know, there are efforts that are currently in place with Lifeline and support that has been around for telecommunication service for decades, and we are transitioning to really robust support mechanisms for internet service, not just on the state level, but on the national level. And we're seeing that with the $14 billion commitment that was part of the infrastructure package signed by President Biden.
So as we start to close here and wrap up, the governor's task force on broadband access in last year's report set the goal of giving all homes and businesses in the state access to 100 megabits per second by 2031. How realistic is that timeline?
Well, I think that's very realistic. I think if we are taking advantage of the new maps that will be more accurate and more granular than the current maps, and the new maps will be available this year. And that has been a national project to get those more accurate maps available. If we take advantage of those maps and identify exactly where the unserved and underserved areas are, we can absolutely target our support, both state and federal, to the customers that do not yet have that robust internet service that we all want to have.
Bill, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Bill Esbeck, Executive Director for the Wisconsin State Telecommunications Association, representing local exchange carriers, wireless, and internet service providers. Ahead this hour, we learn about how to avoid internet and phone scams with the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau. Have you or a loved one lost money to internet fraud or a phone scam? What did a phishing attempt try to get you to do? 800-642-1234. We'll talk about it. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. You are with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Mary Kate McCoy with a story about St. Patrick's Day in Milwaukee.
Everyone's Irish on St. Patrick's Day, they say. Writer Shauna Singh Baldwin married an Irishman and discovered her own bit of Irishness at Milwaukee's annual parade.
If I knew more Canadian women of Indian origin married to American men of Irish origin, I might ask why my husband David has never felt a burning desire to take me to Milwaukee's annual St. Patrick's Day parade. His American accent gives way to Irish whenever he says, "Not at all." Finally, he gave way to my entreaties. He selected his best Kelly green shirt, and I wore a green chiffon sequin-embroidered chunni to drape around my neck on a sunny but cold Saturday in March. We joined the crowd, waving and cheering as floats, cars, and bands made the turn from Juneau Avenue to flow past the Water Street bars. "Bless you," said a huge, smiley man in a white surplice bordered in gold. Mitre in one hand, he folded David into a bear hug and said all his sins were forgiven. I thought he was dressed as the Pope, but David said he was St. Patrick, which made the forgiveness more fun. St. Patrick, I'm told, charmed the snakes out of Ireland. I grew up respecting snakes as protective rather than ignoble creatures that can trick women into errant apple-eating. So I've never been sure he was wise. Mr. St. Patrick posed for photos with a green bodysuited leprechaun and reached up to shake hands with a stilt walker in a tall green hat. When a classic car with a car dealer's ad appeared, he confessed to being a parishioner of said dealership. Smiley, auburn ringleted girls and a few young lads from what must be 20 troops of Irish dancers in this city stopped to jig for him. Their rigid, unmoving arms are symbolic of resistance to their British colonizers, a fact my Indian grandparents would understand and greatly appreciate. Seagulls circled and pounced for discarded hot dog buns. We made our way up Water Street the better to hear the bagpipers. I overheard someone say, "I'm calling in sick on Monday." Over the music, a woman beside me in the crowd asked where had I bought my green sequin chunni. I said, "On a trip to Pakistan," and made my usual joke. "I'm IBM, Irish by marriage." "Oh, we're all Irish today," she said, and turned back to the parade. After the bagpipers came members of a Scotch-Irish troupe brandishing swords and stomping along in kilts. Three waitresses with shamrocks painted on their cheeks spoke Spanish as they poured green beer from a barrel. Along came two African-American women carrying a banner advertising Celtic traditions. David and I posed for a photo at Duke's Bar so we could send it to my turbaned Uncle Duke in India. As we walked up Yankee Hill back to our car, David pointed out an Irish flag, noting it has the same colors as an Indian flag. "Right," I said, "and if you don't take me to this parade next year, I'm going anyway." "Promise I will," he said. "I just didn't realize we all need more Irish."
Shauna Singh Baldwin is a writer and the author of several books. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Mary Kate McCoy.
And now to scams. The annual Fisher's Favorites report has come out by the cybersecurity firm Vade. It found a sharp rise in Facebook phishing and growing sophistication in Microsoft phishing attacks. How often do scams land in your inbox? What do you do about them? Does your organization filter them or have a reporting structure? Does your company alert its customers of malicious attacks? 800-642-1234. Jim Temmer is president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Wisconsin, also board chair of the International Association of Better Business Bureaus. Jim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Great to be here, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. Give us your 10,000-foot view, if you will. How are scam artists operating these days? What do you see out there? Is it sophisticated?
You bet it is. You know, as technology has advanced, so has scammers. Used to be door-to-door scams, you know, blacktop and roofing and things like that. And of course, we've all had robocalls, and it's gotten into emails, you know. Years ago, there was a joke. Everyone got the email from the Nigerian prince, you know, trying to get millions of dollars into the United States. And texts now, social media, websites, even QR codes. It's all over. You can't avoid it. But the good news is, through education, you can not be scammed. And that's what we try and do at the Better Business Bureau. It's part of, you know, creating a trustworthy business environment.
What do you think are the characteristics of the most impressive, the most dangerous scams to people that can hook a lot of people in with some type of scam?
Well, we look at three factors. We look at exposure, susceptibility, and monetary loss. Exposure, now, again, through texts and emails, a scammer can contact millions of people. But how many of those people are going to fall for it? What's the susceptibility? And then the money loss. Some things, like we mentioned, cryptocurrency scams, the average loss is about $1,600. And believe it or not, young people, I think they're trying to invest in their future, which is good, but it's a get-rich-quick scheme, and they're losing money. And the number one group to be scammed in our country, believe it or not, are young adults from 18 to 24. Older Americans tend to lose more money because of, you know, romance scams and home improvement scams are big-ticket items, and they have more money. But this is something that goes across the board. And you know, and it's not just money. When people are victimized, they truly are victimized. They're ashamed. They're embarrassed that they were scammed. They somehow feel like it was their fault. You know, they weren't smart enough. They weren't thinking clearly. There's lost time. If you have to go in and redo your credit cards, or heaven forbid, your social security number, your taxes are taken over by a scammer. There's so much work on the back end. So it's money. It's victimization, it's a loss of time. And we're talking about billions and billions of dollars a year. So this is really something that affects all of us.
Jim, you mentioned that cryptocurrency scams have become very risky. How do these scams work?
Well, it's like an investment scam. And again, these have been around for a long time. Someone will contact you maybe through a text or through social media. This is one thing that happens. People are like, what happens if someone, you know, gets my contacts or gets my emails? They then pretend to be you. So you're getting a message from a friend saying, hey, here's a great cryptocurrency stock. It's going to really, you know, blow through the roof. You're going to make money hand over fist. Or you're going to get a cold call and they're going to be really saying this is fantastic. You know, it all sounds plausible up front, right? And the recommended stocks might be very low priced. You have to be so careful with anyone on an aggressive cold call like that, or even if you think it's someone you know. You have to be very wary if someone is guaranteeing your investment will perform in a certain way. So just like any other type of investment, you have to do your homework on the front end. And again, if you get a text, a call, an email from someone you don't know and that you didn't instigate, delete it. Don't answer it. Same thing, you know, we talk about phone calls all the time. If you don't know that caller ID, don't answer the phone, because you will not be scammed if you don't communicate with the scammer.
there's this smishing scheme, one of the more recent scamming techniques, where scammers who use smishing are posing as the Department of Motor Vehicles, the DMV. What is going on there?
Right. Well, the DMV now, you can do basically everything online with them. You can renew your plates. You can do all sorts of stuff. So the scammers know that, and they're sending texts out. And it'll say, yeah, we're working with the DMV, and, or, you know, your license is up for renewal, whatever it is, please enter your information here. Mm-hmm. So they're going to ask you for all sorts of stuff, right? But you have to realize and remember, anytime you're dealing with a government agency, their website's going to end in .gov. And the best thing to do, like for DMV, and they came out with a press release, go to wisconsindmv.gov. Then you know for sure it's an official state site. For-profit companies with .com or .org, they might ask for personal information, additional charges for things that are free. This has been going on for a while, but since everything is online now with the DMV, more and more people are getting these smishing alerts.
And these smishing alerts, some cell phones have a program in them, like this artificial intelligence programs that labels these as scam likely. Do these programs lessen how many people get these types of scams?
Well, it can, and it does, even with the phone calls. A lot of times it'll come up potential scam, potential spam even, because it's an algorithm where they know how many calls are being made from that number or being sent from that text number. So it will decline. But the thing is, there's always numbers out there. There's always more. You know, we can look at do not call lists, but scammers don't follow the law anyway. They're criminals. So they will call you. They will text you. The best thing, again, is block those numbers. Don't respond. And if it says, you know, respond no if you don't want any more texts, don't do that. Or if you get the robocall and it says press 9 to get off our list, don't do that. Because what they're trying to do also is make sure that it's a live number. Because they're just sending these out to numbers, not individuals. Mm-hmm. You aren't being individually targeted.
Jim Temer with us leads the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau, alerting us to the landscape of scam artists, what to watch out for. Have you gotten an email asking you to donate to a fake Ukrainian refugee charity? We'll talk about that. Maybe you've gotten a bogus text message telling you that you've won cash. What do you do when you suspect a scam, regardless of how it comes at you? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Jim Temer here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing how not to fall prey to scams. Washington Post personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary wrote recently that rising inflation makes con artists jump for joy because they know frightened investors are more likely to fall for scams involving gold, involving cryptocurrencies, foreign currencies, fake investment opportunities. What scam looked too good to be true? Did you verify its fraudulent nature? How did you do that? Still time, 800-642-1234. Jim Temer of the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau with us for about 9 more minutes. Jim, let's talk about these scams involving Ukraine. Since Russia invaded on February 24th, there have been a number of groups who've raised money to help the Ukrainian government, citizens, refugees, and authorities have warned that thieves are using this as a way to steal money. What do you see out there?
Well, every time that there's a tragedy, be it a hurricane or a fire or, in this case, of course, war, there are unscrupulous people trying to take advantage of it. And this is one of those scams, and we see them all the time, that really is one of the worst ones, because not only does it scam the person giving the money, it hurts the people that could have used that money on the other end and who desperately need it. So you have to be very careful and know who you're giving to. And it's not just out-and-out scams, but some charities, even well-intentioned charities, if they don't have a presence in Ukraine and the ability to help people there, and they're just starting out, they might not be able to really make your money worthwhile. You know, we want to help. We want to do things. Also, local drives can collect food and clothing and sending stuff like that. But at this time, what they need is money. If you have an international relief agency who's already there, think about it, your money, they can buy what they need, be it food, water, whatever, in bulk, and they have supply chains to deliver it. If you donate a case of water or a jacket in Wisconsin, it's going to take quite some doing to get it over there. So you have to watch who you're doing, even what is the web address, because sometimes these scammers will pull up a name or a web address that's one letter off, or they'll add an S to something that's well known and out there, and they'll make it look like a legitimate website. So you have to be very careful. Another thing with this is you may get phone calls, right? And it could be, again, from a legitimate relief agency saying, donate, donate. And that's a fantastic idea. But if you're dealing with telemarketers, they can keep up to 80 or 90% of your donation. So only a little bit goes to the cause you want to support. So if you are talking to someone on the phone and they mention an agency you want to help, don't do it over the phone. Find that agency's website and donate directly to them.
So what would be your suggestion for vetting these agencies and figuring out where best to place your donation and just kind of making sure that where you do want to send it to is practical and above board?
Well, you can always check. Actually, the BBB has charity standards with our Wise Giving Alliance, and their web address is give.org, give.org. There are plenty of charity advisor. There's a lot of different websites out there where you can vet charities. You can look at 990s. You can do all that kind of stuff. That's another thing. 990, of course, will show you tax information. If you're dealing with someone who claims that they are a nonprofit charity, ask for their IRS number. Then, I mean, you can look it up and you can see if they're legitimate or not. You also have to look out for crowdfunding appeals. They're best if you know personally who you're giving to, because some of those platforms, their policies regarding fees and distribution of collected funds might not be too upfront. So they're easy to be scammed. Someone can come up with photographs and a story and throw it out there, and you're looking at crowdfunding to come through, and you will. I mean, again, we want to help. We're people with large hearts here, and we like to help out people in need. And that is the key. When there's emotion involved, that's where scammers do their best work.
Let's bring on a call here. Brad is with us from Williams Bay. Hi, Brad. What would you like to bring up?
I'd like to hear him talk about a YouTube channel called Scammer Payback. It's about people getting scammed, and this guy's trying to help out with that.
Brad, thank you. Jim, have you heard of that?
No, I personally am not familiar with that website, but there are a lot of people and organizations that try and fight scamming. I mean, the Federal Trade Commission here in Wisconsin, we have the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Of course, the BBB, you know, local law enforcement, the FBI, they try and go after the large rings that really control a lot of the scamming that's going on. But it's so difficult. Like, our number one scam for the past several years is online purchasing. So everyone is purchasing online now, right? Because of the pandemic, we aren't going out, and it's just become so convenient. There are fake websites all over the place. Actually, if you're looking on Facebook Marketplace, 75% of those ads can lead to scam websites. And they'll be up a minute, and then they'll come down. And they'll be up 2 weeks later with a slightly different address, and they'll come down. So they're very hard to track. This is why we have our scam tracker tool, which is an interactive heat map where you can go anywhere in the United States and Canada. In the United States, you can sort it by zip code, and you can find out in real time what scams are being reported and going on. So we really have communities helping each other. You report a scam, people can see about it, phone numbers, any information, names, even if it was just an attempted scam and you didn't really lose money. That way you're helping out not only your neighbor or anyone who wants to know, but we share all that information with law enforcement as well.
That's really great to know, to really see the movement, track the movement, and being very transparent about what scams are popping up. Talking with Jim Temer, president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau, serving Wisconsin, as we talk about scams and what we should be aware of. And your questions, 800-642-1234. Heard from Elisa from Milwaukee, called in, couldn't stay with us. And they're wondering if you've heard of any scams involving student loan forgiveness and what to be aware of.
Oh, yeah, a lot of those. Actually, people who don't even have student loans get contacted about their student loans. Mm-hmm. When you're contacted by anybody who says that they can pay them down, you can be forgiven, everything you hear like that, take with a grain of salt. Do your own research up front. If it's a company who claims they're doing this for you, you can always vet them on BBB.org. We've got, you know, reviews, we've got complaints, we've got accreditation standards. When it comes right down to it, you know, there is no free lunch. We always say if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So anytime you think that you're getting free money, like we recently had these lottery winners here in Wisconsin. We had one a few years ago here in West Allis. And people would use their name saying, oh, you know, they won hundreds of millions of dollars and they're randomly giving, $10,000 to 5,000 people, whatever it is. And people do fall for this. Mm-hmm. Actually, the reported loss in that scam is $13,000.
Wow.
We had a person in New Berlin here in Wisconsin said they were going to get $50,000 and they were tricked to giving their driver's license number and social security number. We have another person that lost over $3,000 because he had to send $200 in to activate his winnings and $3,000 to pay his taxes on the money he was going to get.
Oh, goodness.
And he said he did it because he was desperate for money. Again, when you're emotional and you're in a great need, either scared or happy, wow, I won, you're not going to think logically and you're going to fall for a scam.
Well, Jim, in the last few moments we have with you, I was really surprised. The Federal Trade Commission said last month that American consumers reported losing more than $5.8 billion to fraud in 2021, an increase of 70% over 2020 figures. What is going on there?
Well, we mentioned online purchasing earlier, and that has gone up dramatically. So all the online scams have gone up. Plus, I'll tell you that whatever it was, $5 billion figure is way underreported. Because of the embarrassment and shame people have, they don't usually report scams. So it might be as much as 10 times that figure. So what it is it's more people going online, shopping online, doing any kind of transaction online. You have the ability to lose your personal information, lose your money, and much more than that. So be careful. Stay online. Do whatever you want to do, but use your head.
Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, really? My pleasure. Thank you, Kate.
Jim Temer is president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Wisconsin. We have a link to its give.org for tips on vetting charities. Find it at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, we'll explore the latest science on what happens when babies sleep or don't. Are you worried about how your newborn is sleeping? Tell us how they're doing, how you're coping. 800-642-1234. Your questions on healthy baby sleep. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.